Trump and the other defendants have committed persistent and repeated fraud. Last week, we proved that in our motion for summary judgment. Today, we will prove our other claims. My message is simple. No matter how powerful you are, no matter how much money you think you may have, no one is above the law. And it is my responsibility and my duty and my job to enforce it. The law is both powerful and fragile. And today in court, we will prove our case. I thank you all for being here. And again, justice will prevail. Thank you.
I know Donald Trump is hoping justice does not prevail, because yesterday was the opening day of the New York civil case against Donald Trump. It is a civil case for fraud against him personally, as well as his businesses. Now, he didn't have to be there, but he did show up and he did what he does best: complain on Fox News.
This is a continuation of the single greatest witch hunt of all time. We have a rogue judge who rules that properties are worth a tiny fraction, 1/100th, a tiny fraction of what they actually are. We have a racist attorney general who's a horror show, who ran on the basis that she was going to get Trump before she even knew anything about me.
If there's one thing Donald Trump's going to do, it's talk smack against the prosecutors. Also, the judges. One of the interesting things that he said in that little rant he gave to Fox News was he said that it was a not fair trial because there was no jury, which is really ironic because it was Trump's attorneys who asked for this to be a bench trial, meaning the judge decides it's on their own and there is no jury. So he complained about something that was his own decision and his team's decision as far as this case goes. But speaking of this case, cameras aren't allowed inside the courtroom, but here's an overview of what happened and what's expected to happen from the New York Times. The trial stems from a lawsuit brought last year by New York's Attorney General Letitia James, accusing Mr. Trump and other defendants, including two of his adult sons and his companies, fraudulently inflating the value of their assets to obtain favorable loans and insurance deals. The judge in the trial, Arthur F. Engoron, has already found that Mr. Trump and the other defendants were liable for fraud and that the annual financial statements on which they listed their assets were filled with examples of such misconduct. Trial will determine whether Mr. Trump will pay a significant penalty as well as any other punishments. Ms. James has asked that he pay $250 million and that he and his sons be permanently barred from running a business in New York, which is one of the reasons that we're seeing Trump be so defensive about this trial specifically, is because what it does is it seeks to rip apart the mythology that Donald Trump has created around himself and around the name Trump, that it is synonymous with good business, that it is synonymous with wealth, when in reality, it seems to be synonymous with fraud. Now, Kevin Wallace, who's a lawyer for the Attorney General's office, delivered an opening statement in this case. Mr. Kevin Wallace told the courtroom that employees of Mr. Trump had arbitrarily assigned value to individual assets, properties like Trump Tower and 40 Wall Street, to arrive at the former president's desired net worth. He played a clip of Michael D. Cohen, Mr. Trump's former fixer, explaining the process, prompting the former president to cross his arms and shake his head, scowling. Again, Donald Trump didn't have to be there, but chose to be there. Now, his defense was essentially, and not just his defense in the news, but his defense in court, was to allege that this is just, one of his favorite terms, a witch hunt. That kicked off a sequence in which Justice Engoron went back and forth with Ms. Haba, who's one of Trump's attorneys, and the other defense lawyers, correcting what he said were legal errors from their presentations, which is not something that you want if you're the defendant in a trial that is a bench trial. Now, one thing that we should highlight is that Trump keeps admitting that he lowers the values of his properties. He's just too dumb to realize this. And he started with this post on Truth Social. Let's take a look at this. It says Judge Engoron's valuation of Mar-a-Lago, the most spectacular property in Palm Beach, Florida, is fraudulent. Again, I gotta stop. This is the judge who gets to decide this case. by Trump's own team's wishes, the judge decides liability in this case, not a jury, the judge. So taking to social media to attack the very person who has that power is so counterintuitive that only Donald Trump could do something like this. But let's go back to the post. He says he states a value of $18 million, knowing full well that it's worth perhaps 50 to 100 times that amount. And Gorin is working diligently to misrepresent me and my net worth, which is substantially more than is shown on my fully disclaimed financial statements. I have not even included my most valuable asset, brands. He should resign from the quote bench and be sanctioned by the courts for his abuse of power and his intentional and criminal interference with the presidential election of 2024, of which I am leading all candidates, both Republican and Democrat, by significant margins. Likewise, Ms. James should resign for purposeful and criminal election interference. She is fully aware that Mar-a-Lago and other assets are worth much more than what she is claiming. Both of these Democrat operatives are a disgrace to New York and to the United States of America. Again, very smart move to attack the judge that holds your business reputation in the palm of his hand. But he also reiterated this yesterday.
Just so you know, my financial statements are phenomenal. They are actually less in terms of the numbers used than the actual net worth. The actual net worth is substantially more. No bank was affected. No bank was hurt. They don't even know why they have to be involved. And they've so testified. They can't believe that they're involved because they were paid back on time. There were no defaults. There were no problems. And it was like a perfect client.
Everything was perfect. Everything was good. It was big and it was perfect. And I think, Senator Turner, that we're seeing, like I said earlier, this defensiveness is so rooted in the fact that this is someone whose entire personality and his he put it in all caps, his brand has been built around being a savvy businessman. And the curtain has been pulled back. The emperor has no clothes, which is something so many people knew for a long time. But having it proven in a court of law, I think, just really hurts his ego.
Definitely. That's what this is all about. You know, and when he talks about perfect, that's his anthem. The Trump anthem is everything about me, everything around me is perfect. And if you don't believe me, I mean, if you don't believe it, just ask me and I'll tell you it's perfect. He had to be there. Ravana, you laid out an important point. One, it is for him to protect the image that he is this ultra wealthy person. Two, it is his home turf. And three, he needs to put on a political show. That is why he showed up, because having him show up and hold press conferences around this trial animates his base like no other. He can continue to paint himself as the victim and to show them live and in living color how unfair the system actually is. He comments on the judge, but I noted that he called the Attorney General Letitia James a racist. I want to let Mr. Trump know, impossible. She is not a racist. People think they can bandy that word about and make it so. Racism is about systemic racism. It's about a power dynamic. It's not an individual black person being attorney general. It is the power dynamic rooted in this country of white supremacy that black people have not had the opportunity to wield that kind of global power. And people need to understand that just because he is calling her racist does not make it so. And he's not the only one, Ravana, that says this whole notion of reverse racism. All we got to do is ask DeSanctimonious and he'll tell you it is a misnomer. It is not true. Racism is pervasive and it is systemic. It is not about one individual act. It is about multitudes of acts over time, over generations. And so it's not even funny, but it's quite disappointing because the people who follow President Donald J. Trump will believe that this is in fact racism. I wonder what he would have said if the attorney general had been white. What would he have labeled it then?
Right. And it's so insidious because we do see racism so to such a large extent in our justice system, even in civil cases in our justice system, but particularly in criminal trials. So to sit there and pretend that it's racist against white people when in reality, you know, white people are significantly less likely to be charged with a crime, than their black counterparts. Committing the same crime, they're more likely to get lesser sentences. That's we see crimes that of poverty are further criminalized. The sentences are higher versus Donald Trump, who is a career criminal, a man who has made all of his money and all of his fame and all of his glory by committing crimes, is someone who is allowed to rise to be the president of the mother effing United States, but somehow he's a victim of anti-white racism. Give me a break. That has become such a core part of his identity, is the victimhood. So let's talk a little bit about his self-victimhood, the victimhood of his children, because they're also involved in this lawsuit. Let's start with this post from Donald Trump. It says, people are starting to see what a great company I built through the trial started by the, there we go, racist attorney general of New York State. I don't know what that nickname is about, but I'm sure that it's rooted in racism. He calls her Peekaboo James. It was all supposed to be private, but in many ways, it is exposing great success. Incredible assets, lots of cash, and it only gets better. It is also stating loud and clear, don't move your company to New York. And if you are already here, move out fast. Too much wealth, though Donald Trump might be forced to move all of his companies out of New York very, very soon. And if you are already here, move out fast. Too much work and heartache dealing with the radical left, Democrats, Marxists, and fascists, something that a lot of people would describe Donald Trump as. Good day at trial today, as the judge will be honoring the appellate court's unanimous decision on the statute of limitations. This reduces the case by approximately 80%. See you in court on Tuesday morning. Now, Trump isn't, as I mentioned, the only one involved in this case. His two adult sons, I almost called them large adult sons, are also included in this case. And so they also did something that they learned from their daddy, go on TV and cry, cry, cry. Here's Eric Trump on Hannity.
So Mar-a-Lago is one of the most valuable properties anywhere in the world, worth well over $1 billion. Look at the portfolio of properties. They're incredible. And there's no one that's done more for the New York City skyline than Donald Trump. We hire literally and employ thousands and thousands of workers. But those details don't matter to these monsters.
I think a majority of New Yorkers would disagree with you, Eric. I think that there are other people who have done significantly more for the New York skyline. And I think a lot of those didn't have the audacity to put their names in giant letters on the buildings that they had constructed. So that was one defense, but no one goes on the air near tears to defend Donald Trump more than one Lindsey Graham.
It's a systematic effort to destroy Donald Trump as a political person. His crime was he was a good conservative president. I've never seen hatred toward a political figure like I see against President Trump. The left will do anything to ruin his life, to keep him from being president again. And we're not going to let New York get away with this. If you think
Mar-a-Lago's worth 18, how do you stop a judge?
He wins the primary. He gets to be president again. This judge is a joke.
Senator Turner, I think that Lindsey Graham specifically shilling for Trump in the media is such a good case study on how the Trump brand, as it were, has captured the Republican Party. Because Lindsey Graham, all of his faults, was someone who initially opposed Donald Trump's candidacy and was attempting to raise the alarm, I guess, for a period of time about what he would do to the party. And then he immediately capitulated and bowed down to Donald Trump, and the party bowed down to Donald Trump. And now they have to face the monster that they created. They have to pretend that a perfectly legitimate legal trial is somehow an attack on democracy. They have to pretend that actual attacks on democracy are not that, and that it was just trying to fight for fairness in our elections. And it's so funny that they have to reckon with this monster that they created, and it's pathetic.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear that Senator Lindsey Graham did not have true conviction when he was first criticizing then Mr. Trump before he became president, because if he was truly convicted, he would still hold that conviction to this day. This is, again, they are people like Lindsey Graham and most of the Republicans are afraid of President Trump's base, period. And they don't want to run afoul of Mr. Trump or his base. And then I know that Senator Lindsey Graham, or I would like to think that he's smarter than the comment that he made during that interview about when he was asked, well, how do you beat the judge? He said, win the primary. No, sir, that is not how you beat the judge. There's something called separation of powers, baby. I hope to God that he got that civics lesson in school, but the judiciary branch of government is a separate, co-equal branch of government, and you cannot tell that branch of government what to do. So this is not simply about, as much as I know they wish it were, about Mr. Trump winning the primary. Will not have him winning the primary will have no impact if he wins the primary. It looks like he's poised to do so. Mm-hmm. I will put that in the parking lot, Ravonna. But if he, in fact, he does win the primary, that has no bearing on this case whatsoever.
Exactly. When I was in law school, there was never a day we learned that you can ask for a dismissal of a case based on beating Ron DeSantis in North Carolina or whatever they're trying to. I mean, it's so ridiculous. Of course, they have to sort of do these Hail Mary attempts of defenses. These absolutely what we can see is absurd arguments. And I think you're right. I think that Senator Lindsey Graham is probably smarter than the things he's saying, but you know, he's cornered because they let Trump dictate the entire platform of the Republican Party.
He controls that party. They should, talking about branding, hell, they just need to go ahead and rebrand the Republican Party to Trump Party, period. Like those big golden letters on all his buildings, because that's what this is coming down to. And Mr. Trump is going to have a hold on the Republican Party for quite some time beyond his first presidency, beyond if he gets it a second time. He has definitely built this party, no doubt, in his own image. So your reference to this is the monster that they created, absolutely. And it is going to linger for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm. I'm picturing them having to be up on a ladder, peeling the Trump letters off of the metaphorical building that is the Republican Party.
That and you're is right, it.
It's going to take them quite some time. And, because they gave them all the power. I remember in 2020 when they were announcing their platform, they didn't. They just said at CPAC, whatever Trump wants, or at the Republican convention, they said, whatever Trump wants is going to be our platform. We're not going to have an official platform. And now it's come back to bite them all in the ass.
Yeah, I mean, he took the power, no doubt. And he's shrewd at this. I mean, say what we will about him, his policies, xenophobia, you name it, that which is Donald J. Trump. But he is very shrewd. He's very calculated. And that reality TV persona is working well for him, especially among his base, Ravonna. And the Democrats better get a clue, and they better get it real quick, because this is fuel for him, where somebody else, this probably would make them down and out for Donald J. Trump. That's why he showed up. This is his fuel.
Yep. And I mean, even on the campaign trail, he's talking about he would rather be electrocuted to death than die in a shark attack. And somehow that's rallying his base. Meanwhile, what's Joe Biden doing? Many people, myself included, student loan repayments have started. We're feeling that in our pockets.
That's right.
And Donald Trump is going on the news, rallying his base. The Democrats, they have to wake up because he can win. That's scary.
I think he is going to win, Ravonna, as painful as it is for me to say, unless something drastically changes. He is on his way. This will be a repeat in some cases of 2016, unfortunately.
Yeah,
that's my prediction. I don't want it to be so, though. I'm gonna put that out there.
But and there's a lot of good voices like yourself, like Jenks Ben, sounding the alarm, and hopefully the Democrats finally hear those alarm bells ringing and realize they got to do something different.
That's it.
Clarence Thomas has been in the news a lot for getting lots of presents and lots of money from billionaires, taking fancy trips, riding on private jets of billionaires who just, incidentally also happen to have Nazi memorabilia museums in their houses. But he has, for the first time, recused himself from a case involving the January 6th insurrection. Now, this is notable because he's been heavily criticized in the past for not recusing himself from January 6th related cases, despite his wife's participation in and her continuing contention that Donald Trump actually won the election, that the election was stolen, and she was implicated in some of the decisions in those cases. From NBC News, Thomas, under fire over claims of ethical lapses, had participated last year when the court rejected Trump's bid to prevent White House documents from being handed over to the House committee investigating January 6th. Now, I want to remind you that Thomas was the only justice who sided with Trump in that case. Incidentally, don't look too further into that. Or, you know, his wife's involvement and implication in that case. But this case, not that one, but this one, which Thomas did recuse himself on, is about the emails of former Trump legal advisor and former law school professor John Eastman. The case also involved the now defunct January 6th committee, centering on the efforts by Eastman, a former law professor, to prevent his former employer, Chapman University of Orange, California, from handing over archived emails sent from or to Eastman's account. Now, Eastman was one of Justice Thomas's law clerks, which is why a lot of people believe he recused himself, although we can't know for sure why he did, because from NBC News, as is typical for justices, Thomas did not explain why he recused himself. In addition to Thomas's professional history with Eastman, another reason he might have stepped aside is that to some of the released emails reportedly mentioned Thomas as being the justice likely to be most receptive to Trump's arguments. Of course, they like to pretend that they are an independent branch, not bogged down by political biases. Of course, we know that that's fundamentally not true. These justices were appointed to the bench not in spite of their political activism, but because of their political activism, and because particularly Justice Thomas, Justice Alito, Gorsuch, they knew that they were going to get favorable decisions coming from these justices. The conservatives did. So it's not surprising that they're talking about how he's going to be favorable to a Trump argument in these types of cases, or favorable towards, you know, shielding their liability, or maybe even overturning the election, especially given that every night Justice Thomas goes home and lays in bed next to his election denying wife. And let's not pretend that, given the fact that we know she had unfettered access to his law clerks, that she doesn't have some sort of influence in the decisions he makes. Now, there's a Supreme Court absent of Thomas in this case decided not to hear Eastman's appeal. It was an obvious decision to make because the case was already moot. The January 6th committee got the emails. They received the emails. And now the January 6th committee is disbanded. They concluded their investigation. So it didn't matter anymore. And mootness is one of the reasons that the Supreme Court is not supposed to take on a case. So it was a no-brainer. So he got some good credit for recusing himself, but it really didn't matter, because this was not a very consequential decision to be made. But let's talk a little bit about Eastman and who he is in the Trump cinematic universe, for those of you who might have forgotten. Eastman had pushed the discredited argument that then Vice President Mike Pence had the power to refuse to certify the 2020 presidential election results. He has also been indicted in connection with efforts to overturn the 2020 election results in Georgia. Eastman recently vouched for Thomas after various news reports alleged that the justices had fallen short of ethical standards. Separately, he faces disbarment proceedings in California over his role in the election. Yet another person who is willing to sacrifice everything they ever had in their life for the whims and the wishes of Donald Trump. But Senator Turner, I really think that we shouldn't give Clarence Thomas too much credit here, because this was an easy decision to recuse yourself from. And we'll get into in a minute a case that had a lot more significance that he didn't recuse himself from. But just what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's, I mean, the same. This was nothing. He did absolutely nothing. He should get zero credit for this. And yeah, we know that pillow talk is real. I mean, that's really real. So his wife, I mean, how you laid out, yes, his wife, Eastman being one of his clerks in the past, is a reason to recuse himself, but he knew he had nothing to lose on this one because it wasn't going anywhere in the first place. So this is absolutely nothing done by a Justice Clarence Thomas. And he's operating true to form, Rayvon, and it's really very disappointing. Not just him, but some other justices too, that they really do believe that they are above the law. And in some ways, hell, I mean, they have lifetime appointments. And so unless they're ever impeached, they're going to be there till the wheels fall off. And it gives them more of a luxury to do what it is they want to do without fear of consequence. Because to get that consequence, it's a Herculean task to get a consequence, i.e. impeachment of United States Supreme Court justices, or anybody who has a lifetime appointment for that matter. I mean, Ray, as you know, as an attorney and others of our viewers may know, it's not just the United States Supreme Court judges that have lifetime appointments. There are courts right below the Supreme Court where judges have lifetime appointments. The judiciary needs to look at itself in the mirror. And I'm sure it would not like, if it was really critiquing itself, should not like what it is seeing right now. It is abhorrent. But the mockery that they are making of the United States Supreme Court. And Thomas is not the only one. He's just the most prevalent poster child at this moment. But he's not the only one.
Mm-hmm. And the support for the Supreme Court is at an almost all-time low right now. New polling shows.
Like Congress. Sorry, yeah. I had to throw that in there. But go ahead.
Not looking good for our branches of government.
No, not at all.
But you know what, we're seeing more people demand a code of ethics for the Supreme Court justices that is strictly enforced. Even people on the bench, some of the liberal justices support this vehemently. So, you know, we'll see developments in that. Of course, they don't want to police themselves when you're getting private flights from billionaires and, you know, you're allowed to not recuse yourself at any whim and help those billionaires. One case that Justice Thomas did not recuse himself on was Community Housing Improvement Program, or CHIP, versus City of New York, New York, which SCOTUS declined to hear. They're not hearing this case directly benefits billionaire Harlan Crow, who's one of Thomas's wealthy benefactors that was recently uncovered. So Common Dreams did some excellent reporting, and they spoke with Jeff Hauser, who's the executive director of Revolving Door Project, who had this to say. It is a travesty that Clarence Thomas failed to recuse himself in yet another case from which his right-wing donors could directly benefit. Justice Thomas's billionaire benefactor Harlan Crow has a vested interest in weakening rent control laws across the country to buttress his real estate empire's profits. He continued on. Crow's industry lobbyist of choice, the National Multifamily Housing Council, filed an amicus brief for urging the Second Circuit to take up the challenge to New York City's rent control law in 2021. While the NMHC did not file a brief for the case before the Supreme Court, there should be little doubt that Thomas and his clerks are aware of NMHC's and therefore Crow's interest in the case. Now, activist groups, reformist organizations fighting for Supreme Court reform, judicial reform more broadly, were demanding, sounding the alarm and demanding that he recuse himself on making a decision on whether or not the Supreme Court would take up this case. He did not. And one of the reasons is because of this report that Common Dreams reported on. The recusal demands comes after the Revolving Door Project in July released a report on Crow's ties to the National Multifamily Housing Council, including that, as the group highlighted Monday, NMHC Chair Ken Valick is CEO of three subsidiaries of his company, Crow Holding. So the relationship there is tight. And, you know, Senator Turner, we always talk about how we have legalized bribery in this country as far as it pertains to Congress, as far as it pertains to presidential candidates, and how their wealthy donors get to dictate the laws of our country. The lobbyists get to dictate the laws of our country. But we still see that in a different way at the Supreme Court, because here we have, you know, Harlan Crow, who has gifted all of these things to Justice Thomas, and he is intrinsically wrapped up in this case, and no recusal. He gets to make a decision that benefits Harlan Crow, and we have very little that we can do to fight back against that.
No, I know. I mean, and here it in fact lies the concern here. It is very clear, Justice Thomas, he knows he should have recused himself, but he also knows this too. no consequences and repercussions. Mm-hmm. Even the, you know, all of the justices know that this man should recuse himself. But the chief justice in particular, who sets the stage, sets the environment, they know. But again, no consequences and repercussions. Every American should be concerned about how Justice Thomas and other justices are comporting themselves when it comes to this. And then lastly, Ravana, it's just a reminder of the insidious nature that money can play, the role of big money mm-hmm. can play in shaping the, not just the judiciary, but all facets of our political life here in the United States of America. I mean, it's really no difference than some of the banana republics we talk about from time to time. The corruption is real. It may display itself differently. It may display itself more genteelly, but it is still, in fact, corruption. I mean, Harlan Crow purchased Justice Thomas's mother's house, if I recall, a whole host of other things, Ravana, that we could list. But this is corruption. Example, if you want examples of corruption and how politicians are bought and sold and how the United States Supreme Court is not above reproach, unfortunately, as a court, I'm not talking about individual justices because there are some individual justices that are, but the institution is showing itself to be faltering, to come up wanting when it comes to corruption and allowing their mega donor benefactors to really be in ultimate control.
Republicans are continuing their attacks on voting rights, as you might have guessed, but this time it's happening in Michigan. Now, Michigan Republicans have filed a lawsuit to overturn two voting rights measures that were put in place following referendum votes in 2018 and 2022 by convincing majorities. These are things that the people wanted. And of course, Republicans are trying to undermine that and instead put in place things to prevent people from voting. So let's talk about what those measures were. From New Republic, Great Lakes state residents voted in 2018 and 2022 to approve constitutional amendments that would drastically expand voting access, guaranteeing same-day voter registration, 9 days of early voting, and absentee voting, among other rights. Both measures passed with at least 60% support, and the state legislature has since passed laws to implement the new policy. So the people wanted it. These were popular. They voted for it. They should get it. But 11 Republican officials from the Michigan legislature are suing to try to overturn what they have deemed dangerous policies, as well as to permanently prohibit future citizen-led petition initiatives from being used to affect state election laws. So the only way in which these laws are dangerous is that when more people vote, less people voting Republican. More people are voting against the Republicans. More people are empowered, and the communities that are empowered when we protect these the important things around voting are communities that by and large are not voting Republican. This is an attack on democracy in the state. Don't let them tell you any different. Now, they're exactly what they're afraid of is people getting the right to vote, and their reasoning that they try to give, their justification, is even worse. The lawmakers' argument is based on the independent state legislator theory, remember that from earlier this year? A right-wing theory. At its most extreme, the theory would give legislators unreviewable authority, blocking state courts, state constitutions, and governors from intervening regarding election law. The Michigan Republicans argued that the citizen-led petitions unconstitutionally impinge on the state government's ability to set election laws. That's right, the independent state legislator theory, as I mentioned, is back. Now, if that sounds familiar to you, it's probably from the previously defeated SCOTUS case after Trump tried to use it in to aid his efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Trump was defeated, but then there was a caveat in the ruling that allowed the independent state legislator theory to rear its very ugly head once again, like we're seeing here. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote in the majority opinion that state courts do not have free rein that exceeds the ordinary bounds of judicial review, meaning state courts could interpret the ruling differently. UCLA law professor Richard Hassan warned that Roberts' words were going to create mischief by giving people an opening to seek favorable rulings from lower court judges. And that's exactly what's happening here. Now, this course of action, maybe because it's their only option to roll these back. Like I said, they were passed with a massive mandate. The people wanted these things. Now, the people behind the decision to bring this case definitely did their court shopping, though. This case was brought in the United States District Court for the Western District of Michigan, which has 4 Republican appointed justices and 1 from Democrats. So the odds are in their favor in that regard. So why is this their only vehicle to overturn the voter initiative? So referenda in Michigan, once passed, can't be ignored and are especially difficult to repeal. This is from the Michigan Constitution. No law initiated or adopted by the people shall be subject to the veto power of the governor, and no law adopted by the people at the polls under the initiative provisions of this section shall be amended or repealed except by a vote of the electors, unless otherwise provided in the initiative measure or by 3/4 of the members elected to and serving in each house of the legislature. It could not be any clearer, but Senator Turner, they are desperate to oppress people from voting. They are desperate to stop people from exercising their constitutional right to vote and have authority over what's happening in their lives.
No, that's right, Ray. And they are, you know, absolute. This is another example in the chapter of absolute power corrupts absolutely. They are unpatriotic. So let's just go on and put that out there too, for the Republican Party always throwing that word around, who's a patriot and who's not. This is unpatriotic as hell. Mm-hmm. And to think they think themselves higher than the people, because as you laid out the facts, the data, that the majority of voters in Michigan wanted to expand access to the ballot box, which is indeed a beautiful thing, unless you have to cheat to win. Unless you do not want a broader swath of people to have to exercise or to show their opinion through the ballot box. If you can't win, you cheat. And Republicans are very good at that. But just going at them on the arguments that they use about Democrats, unpatriotic. This is them. They're being unpatriotic right now. And they want more government. What happened to all that less government stuff? What happened to giving the power back to the people stuff? Oh, that's only when you're railing against Democrats. But ultimately, Ray, for me, this is really not about Democrat and Republican. Other than the point that it's Republicans propagating that. That's very clear. It's not Democrats. But for me, the heart of the matter is what it does to the voters of Michigan, whether they swing Republican or Democrat or Libertarian, Green Party, no party, country, rock and roll, R&B, however they rolling. This infringes on their right to have their voices heard, and the whole notion of one man, one woman, or one person, one vote. The people have spoken. That's why you got power referendum. It is a very powerful thing. It is an excellent tool. But that is why Republicans, even in my home state, you know, try to mess around with it. But they think themselves greater than the people who put them in office. And that in and of itself is a damn shame.
These individual liberties and individual freedom Republicans sure do hate when people exercise their individual freedom.
That's it.
Although the government is not shutting down, that doesn't mean Congress has funded everything. A key provision of the American Rescue Plan expired on Saturday, and PBS NewsHour reported on this. Key funding for childcare centers dating back to the pandemic ended on Saturday. More than 220,000 centers counted on those grants to help pay the bills and raise wages. With the loss of funding, one progressive think tank projects that as many as 70,000 facilities could close in the long run. Now, 70,000 facilities, that's roughly 1/3 of the childcare centers in the United States. And what does that mean in terms of the children who are being cared for at these facilities? It means that an estimated 3.2 million children, 3.2 million children could lose access to daycare. And some areas are hit harder than others. Yahoo reported that in 5 states, Arkansas, Utah, Montana, West Virginia, and Virginia, as well as Washington, D.C., the childcare cliff could result in half of the licensed childcare programs shutting down. In Wisconsin, 42 childcare providers have already closed since June, and the childcare industry has been for some time operating on the brink of collapse, particularly a catalyst of this was the pandemic in 2020 when it started. That was when childcare centers across the country shuttered, and it sent many of the workers to find other jobs. Now, what this money did that was given to them through the American Rescue Plan, early childcare educators in the US are in the bottom 2% of earners, making a median $13.71 per hour. The $24 billion in federal aid reached more than 220,000 providers, allowing programs to cover basic costs like wages, benefits, and program materials. The childcare sector is still down hundreds of thousands of workers from pre-pandemic. And so what does this mean on a larger scale? The cliff could cause an estimated 232,000 childcare positions to disappear. That's 232,000 jobs. 232,000 jobs. As for daycare facilities themselves, they're expected to become more expensive for parents as supply dwindles. Capitalism for you. Childcare costs in the US are already some of the highest in the world, with parents paying on average $10,600 annually. And I know all the parents out there know that, that you have experienced that personally. Now, one of the other things that this means, Senator Turner, is that a lot of parents are going to be forced to have to choose. Someone's going to have to stay home and watch these kids. We can't afford childcare anymore, or there's not going to be any facilities anywhere close to us. And so much of that burden is going to fall on mothers. So many mothers are going to be forced to sacrifice the careers that they've been working towards because our government refuses to fund what are actually essential services and things that would benefit the majority of people.
It's an absolute disgrace, right? That's what this comes down to. And it's a stain on both parties. Mm-hmm. I just riddle me this. They can always find a way to come together in a bipartisan spirit when it comes to funding the damn military industrial complex, but they can't come together in a bipartisan way to support our children. And by supporting our children, you got to support the parents. As you said, what are these parents going to do? Either children are going to be left in dangerous situations because the parents are desperate because they have to work. And as we know, one job in this country is not enough. Mm-hmm. You got parents working two and three jobs out of necessity. This ain't no side hustle that is a luxury. It's a side hustle that is necessary. So it is an absolute disgrace. And you know, Ray, I was thinking about, you know, the preamble to the Constitution, right, was to ensure domestic tranquility. You know, they always skip over that part. Let's underline it. Let's bold it. Let's underscore it. Exclamation point, message in a bottle. Okay, on a train, on a plane, however you want to do it. This is an epic failure of the United States Congress. It is an epic failure of this president. And it is an epic failure of our country that we are not out in the streets to stand up for what our children need. They deserve and they need to be in places as they are in their development that are safe and secure and educationally sound. And this country, but namely the elected officials who work or who are supposed to be working on our behalf and should be doing this in our name, should have ensured that the enhanced child tax credit did not go anywhere. And we should be funding these child care centers as part of the social contract, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I see this as very much as I look at K through 12 education. We need to expand that on the pre side for children, for babies, for toddlers, and also through college. That's how I feel about this. I would love to know what some of our viewers feel, but it's immoral and it is an epic fail and it is an absolute stain on this country.
Absolutely. And all it does is serve to benefit us when we have a well-educated populace. When we provide those programs, if we were to expand free preschool, if we were to expand into free college, more people would be able to get better jobs and contribute more to society. It's a win-win-win-win. So why can't they come together?
That's right.
To make just a positive impact on our children and then on their future. And speaking of our children, Republicans specifically have refused to hear any sort of good legislation that might actually protect kids from mass shootings. And instead, Republicans in Texas have passed something that it completely ignores the issues of guns, but instead forces elementary schools to have cops who have guns at every school. Some more on that now from Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Texas lawmakers passed House Bill 3, which requires school districts to place at least one armed officer at every campus during regular school hours. Those officers could be members of a district's own police department, school resource officers, or off-duty officers working as private security. The law, which was passed in response to the Uvalde shooting, included a deadline of September 1st for districts to have officers in place. But it only provided enough extra funding to cover a fraction of the expense of hiring new officers, leaving districts to pick up the rest. Mind you, that's money that's not going towards teachers. That's money that's not going towards materials for the students to have in the classroom. That's money that's not going to lunches for students. That's money that's being spent to have a cop standing in front of the door. Now, the Texas legislature meets every other year for 5 months, which is why the legislation following the May 2022 Uvalde shooting passed this year, in case you were wondering. But the lack of funding is a big deal, as I just mentioned, in education, which is notoriously underfunded, particularly in the South and in Texas specifically. Now, Fort Worth, Texas, for example, is going to have to pay $8.3 million versus the $2.7 they'll receive in additional funding. Now, this is as recent as a recent study placed them 44th out of 50 for per pupil funding. So these kids are already not getting the educational resources they need. And now more of that is going to be diverted towards paying cops. And of course, we have the other issue, which is that this is going to be used, this lack of funding is going to be used to justify school choice and voucher programs. Now, in addition to there being inadequate funding that will impact student performances, there's a cop shortage that Fox News keeps talking about. And it would get worse because of this. Now, many cities across the country, including Fort Worth, are dealing with a critical shortage of police officers. Fort Worth has about 140 vacant officer positions, and that shortage could get worse over the next few years as many of the city's current officers retire, which is why some districts in Texas are leaning on retired officers to fill these school safety officer positions. The work Brandon and the other safety officers do in Burleson ISD is a big change from what he did as a detective, he said. Homicide detectives work with families of victims, identify suspects, and ideally make arrests. School safety officers focus on building relationships with students, parents, and teachers, he said, which takes time. And of course, Senator Turner, they passed this ineffective measure to try to prevent gun violence without actually doing any of the work to prevent gun violence. And they're bringing these officers in who don't have any experience, you know, working security for a school. They don't really know what they're supposed to be looking for. And most of them are probably not going to have anything to do but is sit there and scare the children who are now going to school in an increasingly militarized, you know, environment.
Well, it's clear that they weren't serious, because if they were serious, they would have funded their own venture. All right, I think you and I kind of may part ways just a little bit. I mean, when I think about it from the perspective of the Uvalde shooting and whether or not the goal of the legislature, but we know it wasn't total goal, but part of the goal of the legislature to try to put some protections in place to prevent an active shooter. Mm-hmm. So that's the only reason why for this one, I'm not going, you know, too hard the other way. However, there's a however to this. If they were serious about that, then they would provide the resources that these school districts need to be able to play that out. But they're not serious. And as you laid out, they are causing extra chaos and pain for these school districts that already don't have enough money to educate children as it is. And then there should be a global approach to this. Somehow we think we can police our way out of everything. And that, in fact, is not true. true has been proven not to be true. And though that police shortage that you just laid out there, I mean, it is very true. Those facts speak. I mean, even right here in my home city of Cleveland, there is definitely a shortage of police officers across the country. So I come at this particular story this way, that if the goal is truly, but we see they full of, if the goal was fully to protect children from an active shooter, then they should have fully funded this. But that was not the goal at all. This is a whole bunch of nonsense.
Yeah, and we saw the legislators sort of disregard the wishes and the advocacy of the parents who were victimized by what happened at Uvalde. And how many cops were there? They got there within 3 minutes. Did they stop that mass shooting? No, they did not. Not until it was far, far, far too late. But we'll keep everybody updated on what's going on there. It's along with the cop shortage across the country.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.